the beauty industry is worth over $500 billion globally. But has it helped people feel more beautiful? No, we feel worse than ever before. There is no community untouched by beauty culture. It affects us all. And I believe that in order for philosophy to truly address beauty, it must tackle how beauty is functioning in the real world for real people today, not in theory, but materially. And that's primarily through the beauty industry, through makeup, through moisturizers, through surgery, through Botox, and primarily as a set of gendered beauty standards to meet or to risk social, financial, political punishment. So I'm sure you've heard this one before. Simone de Beauvoir famously said, "One is not born, but rather becomes a woman." And part of that process of becoming the second sex, of becoming a woman, is becoming beautiful. And by that, I don't mean emulating some Hollywood star. I mean the types of the beauty tasks that are so integrated into the take-up of public-facing femininity as to seem inconsequential or even natural, but are indeed effortful and expensive performances of beauty. Shaving your legs and your underarms, shaping your eyebrows, getting a blowout, dyeing your grays, polishing your nails, whitening your teeth, bleaching your mustache, wearing professional makeup, maintaining a certain weight or shape, or wearing clothing that disguises a certain weight or shape. Politically and economically powerful men don't have to do this in order to access power. Conversely, it's almost impossible to name a politically or economically powerful woman who has rejected or could reject these aspects of gendered beauty performance, even if she's not thought of as a great beauty, or even if she doesn't count beauty among her interests or priorities. It's worth noting that on average, the average woman will spend over $250,000 over the course of her lifetime on beauty maintenance. So, moving forward with the idea that our dominant cultural experience of beauty comes from the beauty industry, and that participation in the beauty industry is to some degree compulsory for women in particular, but increasingly as the beauty industry grows for gender non-conforming people and for men as well, today I would like to talk about what the beauty industry provides, where it fails, and how we might work toward a truer understanding of beauty by divesting from the beauty industry. So my arguments are that, one, what the beauty industry sells is not beauty, but an error in beauty. Two, that the beauty industry successfully perpetuates this error through mystification, obscuring the oppressive systems that create the standard of beauty with progressive language, and positioning its products as portals to goodness, worthiness, love, acceptance, transcendence. And three, that the error is proven through the beauty industry's destructive effects on physical health, psychological health, and environmental health. Something that destructive, I don't think can be called beauty. So first, what the beauty industry sells is not beauty, but an error. I don't know, to me, there's no combination of words more nonsensical than beauty industry. Beauty, the innate human longing, beauty, freedom, truth, love, like you cannot port that into products and industrialize it. So what the beauty industry is selling is something else entirely. The question then becomes what? In her book on beauty and being just, Elaine Scarry defines beauty as having four core features. Beauty is sacred. It is unprecedented. It is life-saving, and it invites deliberation. So besides inviting deliberation, I am here, after all, arguing against the dominant understanding of beauty in Western culture. The beauty industry's version of beauty does not meet these requirements. For example, it is not unprecedented. I think the best example of this is the anti-aging industry, which is worth $37 billion globally. Anti-aging marketing implores customers to turn back time, to feel like yourself again, to erase signs of aging and sun exposure, and to return to the past or an imagined past, to the precedent set by youth. The beauty industry is also not life-saving. Those who pursue its physical standards open themselves up to harm. Harsh ingredients can irritate the skin, which is part of the full body immune system, by the way. You don't really want to irritate that. Something as simple as soap is associated with decimating the skin microbiome, which can lead to asthma, eczema, allergies, and other lifelong illnesses. products are formulated with carcinogens and endocrine disruptors. Injectables come with risks, including vision problems, blindness, tissue death, and cosmetic surgery sadly claims lives of hundreds every year. The pressure to meet the standard of beauty additionally leads to decreased mental health. Appearance standards are associated with increased risk of anxiety, depression, dysmorphia, obsessive thoughts, self-harm, and even suicide. So what the beauty industry calls beauty is a public health issue. And Elaine Scarry could have predicted this. She wrote that when a legion of people begin to style themselves after a particular movie starlet, or in other words, when people alter their appearance to meet the same celebrated standard of physical appearance, it is an error in beauty. So we can more accurately describe the premise of beauty industry then not as beauty, but as an error in beauty. And we could more specifically describe it not as beauty, which is multidimensional, sensorial, spiritual, and external, I think, you know, connects you to something outside of yourself, something bigger than yourself. And we could call what the beauty industry is selling just appearance, which is flattened, one-dimensional, and very individualistic. So in mystifying appearance as beauty, the beauty industry strengthens its grip on consumers. So consumers want beauty, they're sold appearance. This does not satisfy that sort of innate human longing for beauty, but without alternative understandings of beauty, people keep trying, buying, and applying products. And this really works. The beauty industry is worth over $500 billion globally. But has it helped people feel more beautiful? No, we feel worse than ever before. Studies show that people's like anxiety about their appearance and obsession with their own appearance is getting worse and worse and worse as more beauty products enter the market. So why is this working if it's just clearly not working? Why are we still buying into it? My argument is that the beauty industry successfully sells this standard through mystification. So it obscures the oppressive systems that create the standard of beauty by co-opting progressive language and positions its products as things that don't affect the body but affect the spirit, affect the soul. So I'm going to get a little bit into the history of beauty standards and how some of these standards evolved. Sociologist Tressie McMillan-Cottom, I'm not sure if you're familiar with her work, but it is incredible. She takes the idea that the beauty industry doesn't sell beauty a step farther. She says beauty isn't what you look like, it's the preferences that reproduce the existing social order. So these preferences are more commonly called beauty standards. These are the individual qualifications that women in particular are expected to meet in order to embody the feminine beauty ideal and thus, at least theoretically, succeed professionally and personally. The standard of beauty is a moving target. It changes from era to era, culture to culture. So this sort of disproves the idea that the standard of beauty is objectively appealing or a product of evolution or based in biology. So beauty standards, rather, are the physical manifestations of systems of oppression. They stem from patriarchy, white supremacy, colonialism, capitalism, and they reinforce systems of discrimination. Anti-aging is ageism for your body. Racism and colorism can be linked to skin lightening and skin brightening. Classism, the skincare standard today is what the kids are calling rich people skin. So that's like a pretty easy one to understand. But beauty standards also reinforce fat phobia, ableism, sexism. The beauty standard stems from the values of an unequal society, but it also reinforces those values as it's adopted. Studies show that those who meet the minimum beauty requirement receive better treatment from teachers and peers. They have access to better jobs with higher salary. They have more social and romantic opportunities. And the opposite is true for people who don't meet the standard of beauty. They have, they are disadvantaged by it and punished for their non-compliance by not receiving the same opportunities. So to really get into the background, let's start with skin tone.
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below. Or visit iai.tv for more debates and talks from the world's leading thinkers on today's biggest ideas.